With us today is Ambassador John Bolton. He was UN ambassador in 2005 and 2006. And then he was a national security advisor to President Trump in 2018 and 2019. And so many things are happening around the world. I figured let's call him in and find out what's going on. How are you, Ambassador Bolton?
Doing great. Love to be in New York for the opening of the UN General Assembly. The worst time to be in New York for the average citizen, but a lot going on.
Would you tell us what the heck is going on in the United Nations? I mean, people are not monitoring it as often as they used to. So tell us, I guess the big players were President Biden and the Chinese PM.
Right. Well, President Biden was here, and on Tuesday he spoke and really didn't say all that much. And that was a stark contrast with Xi Jinping's speech, who did it virtually from Beijing. And I think most analysts said it was as clear a statement of China's effort to displace the United States from world leadership that we've heard. It was delivered calmly, but it was very clearly intended to bring other nations to China's side and against the U.S. So that provided an interesting contrast with the week's big news, the announcement of the U.S., U.K., Australian submarine deal that definitely caught the Chinese by surprise and the French, too. But it's a huge step forward for the U.S. in the Pacific, and that deal, I think, is a precedent for a lot more we could do.
Who is the orchestrator of these deals? It doesn't seem like we have nuclear scientists in Washington these days. And somebody must have orchestrated it.
No, that's a very good point. The Australians had made a deal with the French some years back for the French to build diesel submarines. But the Australians in the past 18 months or so became convinced that diesel wasn't going to protect them against China.
It's like getting a station wagon to run a race or something.
Something like that, yeah. So they thought to themselves, we've got to get out of this French deal. And they came up with an interesting idea. I suspect it had something to do with the Brits and their Prime Minister Boris Johnson to go to the United States and say, would you give us technology for nuclear-powered submarines? This is not nuclear-tipped missiles. This is just the engines for the submarine. And over the past couple of months, they've negotiated a deal to build at least 8 nuclear-powered submarines for Australia. That's like building 8 new nuclear submarines for the United States. This is a huge step forward for us in the Indian Ocean, the Pacific Ocean, a real signal to China that we're determined to not to let them just run wild.
But they're not going to have nuclear weapons, or are they, or need to know basis?
No, these are what are called hunter-killer submarines. So, you know, as the Chinese, for the first time in 600 years, build a blue water navy with aircraft carriers and a capability to go after Taiwan, to take on the Indian Ocean, this kind of submarine capability allows us, through the Australians, to watch what they're doing, and if they have to go on the defense to protect Australia and others from these Chinese capabilities.
China, traditionally for 6,000 years or whatever, has built walls to keep themselves in and everybody else out. Is that philosophy changing?
Yeah, I think very definitely. I think many people have probably heard of the Belt and Road Initiative. It's a way for the Chinese to use economic power over countries in Asia, Africa, and Latin America. They're trying to extend their influence worldwide. And they have real ambitions to displace the United States, first in Asia, but then I think globally as well. And I don't consider it a Cold War, but I do consider it a power struggle as in the 19th century. The Chinese have a very different system, and they want to prevail over us. This has filled a lot of countries with real concern, Japan, India, obviously Australia. And so on Friday, Joe Biden hosts a meeting of the leaders of India, Japan, and Australia at the White House. It's called the Quad for the four countries. It has, like the Australian deal with the UK, the possibility of being a much more coherent way to try and constrain these Chinese ambitions.
So, in other words, I understand that the Japanese are going to extend all the way to Taiwan. And, you know, and the Australians are going to come up from down under, and they're going to box them in and India from the other side.
Yeah, the the Japanese have been talking to Taiwan. It used to be a Japanese colony, and the Japanese, I think, now generally understand if China made a grab for Taiwan, that's equivalent to an attack on Japan. The Australians have been worried about this for a long time, hence the submarine deal. And India, in the past year, has had attacks by China on the line of control between the two countries. They actually border on China, obviously, in Asia. The interesting thing is a number of other countries in Southeast Asia, Singapore, Vietnam, Philippines, are very interested in this Quad. And I think they may not want to join it as such. It's an informal arrangement. But it gives them confidence that the countries that are also affected by this Chinese push to expand their power have more substantial opposition. So this is going to be very active for the United States. You know, we learned a lot about China in the coronavirus pandemic. They lied about the causes of it. They covered up the origins. They withheld data. They tried to influence the World Health Organization. So attitudes in America about China are more negative than at any point since the 1989 Tiananmen Square massacre.
So after 6,000 years of locking their people in, China is out in the space race. They're out landing on Mars, landing on the moon. And I guess President Trump built the
Space Force.
Space Force,
yeah.
in protection of that.
Partially, yeah. Look, China has expanded its military capabilities all across the board, as you point out, in a number of areas. They've got one of the world's most sophisticated cyber warfare programs. They are trying to get into space to have the capability of knocking out our spy satellites. As I mentioned, building a blue water navy, significant increase in their nuclear weapons capabilities. So they're a real threat, really, around the world.
Well, we got the Taliban running Afghanistan, aligning themselves with possibly the Russians and the Chinese. And where did the Pakistanis stand?
Well, this is actually on two fronts. Taliban in control of Afghanistan threatens the possibility of terrorists taking control in Pakistan, too. And there are already a lot of radicals in the Pakistani military. But if the whole country gets taken over by terrorists, that means maybe 150 nuclear weapons in the hands of terrorists, which is a real threat to us and our friends. But beyond that, China, which already has a lot of influence in Pakistan, is going to increase its influence, put more pressure on India. And so this is a big development in that part of the world.
So give us, we got about a minute left. Give us your feelings on what we should be doing before it's too late.
Well, I think the United States has got to look at China and the threat it poses across the board. You know, they've been stealing our intellectual property for decades. They've made a lot of money by doing that. They've enhanced their economic position. They discriminate against foreign companies and investors. They manipulate the World Trade Organization. They're building up their military in the ways we discussed. And they're very, very aggressive politically. So I think the United States needs to come to grips with this threat, needs to talk to its friends, needs to build up alliances, and needs to be prepared to for a long struggle here across the full spectrum of potential power, economic, political, and military. We don't want hostilities, but we don't want to let the Chinese just do what they want.
Has President Biden really put us behind the curve?
Yeah, I don't think the administration is focused. I think that they're watching things happen. They don't understand the implications. They've made a couple of good decisions, I think almost by accident, like this agreement with Australia and the UK. There was no sign the president was really that deeply involved in it. But I think in Congress and across the country, more people see the Chinese threat, Huawei's threat, the 5G telecommunications. We're behind the curve. We can catch up. We can prevail, but we need to start moving.
Has President Biden lost the respect of world leaders?
I think he's losing it in a lot of areas because they thought he would be a return to normalcy. And yet the French foreign minister the other day said this is just like Trump, except without the tweets. And so you see people wondering if he has a grip on his own administration's foreign policy.
So the foreign leaders, last question, the foreign leaders, in their opinion, was Trump worse or was Biden worse?
Well, I don't think they've made up their minds on that one yet, and it depends on which ones you ask. But what I think the world wants from us is steady American leadership. They're going to disagree with us a lot, but they want to see a strong America, because if we withdraw from the world, if our policy is unclear, really international peace and security is threatened.
Ambassador John Bolton, thank you for everything you've done for America and continue to do for America and speaking out for America. God bless you and God bless America.
Thank you. Glad to be with you, John.